I mean, listen, we're talking about practice.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is KETR's Locker Room, your sports podcast for Northeast Texas. Each week, we look at the biggest headlines in sports and highlight local sports stories. Here's your hosts.
All right, guys, we're back here on KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch, Taylor Phelps, and Jordan Davis here once again. Guys, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. First, we're going to talk the most polarizing sports figure in Texas history. We're going to end up the controversial segment of the day with the best college player ever. There's two recent guys and some pretty historic figures in there. Then we're going to talk Johnny Manziel and all the stuff that goes on with him, talk the Rangers, and finish the show off today with the Cowboys, a season preview. We're going to talk the schedule, and we're going to talk our three Cowboys players to watch this season. So first, guys, who's the most polarizing sports figure in Texas history?
There's so many. There's so many Texas historians in sports, as I can say. But I'm going to go with Michael Irvin.
Okay.
Michael Irvin, during his time, was probably the most talked about Texas athlete, like, in the world. Simply because he just caught touchdowns. He said what he wanted to say. He always stood back with what he said. I would go with him. And it's slightly over Nolan Ryan, because Nolan Ryan has a lot of leeway in Texas as well.
Ooh, man, he could do no wrong.
Yeah. And I kind of agree with Jordan. There's a lot of people, but there's not many that are, man, he's obviously the man. You have people like Hakeem at Houston. You have Dirk. You have Nolan Ryan. Mm-hmm. You have Jeff Bagwell. People like that that have kind of been the franchise player for a while, but they weren't always just the central athlete, and the Texans are relatively new. You could put Greg Popovich in there. You could put Tim Duncan. There's a lot of different sports figures, but I think the one that stands out to me is just someone who kind of defines Texas sports is Tom Landry, coach of the Cowboys for 29 years and the first ever coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Just what he was able to bring to that franchise with two Super Bowls, five NFC titles, 13 divisional titles. He's got the third most wins in NFL history. I mean, this is a guy who was born in Texas, you know, went through most of his career in Texas, had a stint with the New York Giants as a player.
Right.
But as far as someone who just, like we talk about, polarizes Texas sports, Tom Landry, he's got streets named after him, got a statue outside Cowboys Stadium. Is just, he's kind of the man. And usually coaches are like that, because coaches stick around a lot, can stick around a lot longer than player can.
Yeah.
So when we talk about basketball, we see Greg Popovich as someone who's been with the franchise for a while, but nothing is more Texas than Dallas.
Yeah.
And nothing is more Texas than the Dallas Cowboys.
Exactly.
And the face of that has been Tom Landry.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as player, I think if we talk about polarizing sports figure as a player, that's a lot more difficult to define because, like you say, Michael Irvin, you kind of have a guy of each franchise, but not someone who I think in Texas everyone has kind of been led behind and been like the forward pushing person and someone who's won so many championships you can't deny that it's them. But yeah, Michael Irvin could be on that list. Troy Aikman could be on that list.
Anybody from the Cowboys
championship years could definitely make that list.
Okay, well, how about this, guys? Who is your the person that gets the most attention in Texas history as a sports figure? Like maybe T.O. with Get Your Popcorn Ready, or
Tony Romo.
I think that's more for us because we're that generation and we've seen that. But also media makes it that way too. The media is a lot more invasive now with Twitter and stuff. So we do know when Tony Romo goes out with Jessica Simpson.
If you
wanted to know exactly what time they do everything, you can know. Because someone's keeping track of it. So, yeah, Tony Romo's but it's all the Cowboys. I mean, we talk about this. They're the ones that everyone focuses on.
Yeah.
I think Nolan Ryan could be on that list just because now that he's been a pitcher with the Rangers, now he's been more of a focus through the championship years too. So he's one that you could look at.
Yeah.
But, yeah, attention getting has to be a Cowboy. You could say Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
is probably the most. Yeah. I mean, with he's even the one responsible for firing Landry and, you know, upsetting a lot of people.
Wow.
And so he's definitely someone who, yeah, I would probably say Jerry Jones is being the most talked about and just central focus of the media in Texas sports.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, well, let's move on to the other topic for this first segment of the show. Who would you say is the best college player?
Now, here's football player. Correct.
Best college football player. Here's the nominees. We got Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Herschel Walker, Barry Sanders, Earl Campbell, and Archie Griffin. Now, you'll notice a theme here. All those guys from the past, all running backs. And the last two, or the first two guys I mentioned, are both quarterbacks.
Quarterbacks, yes.
So you definitely see the shift in what matters in football nowadays.
Yeah. When looking at this, like I said, I never really liked Tebow as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But after I look at these stats, 9,285 yards passing, 88 touchdowns to only 16 interceptions, 2,947
yards. That's a career.
That's a career.
16 interceptions, a career. He's averaging four interceptions a year.
Four interceptions a year. He had 57 touchdowns, a Heisman, and two championships. I mean, you can't beat those stats.
Yeah.
I mean.
And we can't really say Johnny Manziel yet because we haven't seen the final product.
He just had one season.
Now, he definitely has the capability if, you know, if he plays all the way through his senior year, he has the capability to win some championships and win a couple more Heismans, or, I mean, that's crazy to say, a couple more Heismans, but definitely has the potential. He did it his freshman year, and they're only getting better. They've only gotten better recruiting classes than what they had when he was a freshman. But I think his main problem is keeping his head on straight and being able to play and not be someone who's going to fall back and end up getting suspended or whatever for anything like that. But definitely Tim Tebow is just someone who's put up incredible stats in today's day and age where I think stats are more easily obtainable, as it's not as a pounding game as it once was, and the clock doesn't run as fast as it once did. Mm-hmm. But Tim Tebow, just his character and the way he led Florida to two national championships, there was so much more in there than just stats. You know, there was so much more. He defined that team and that school so much more than you can even put on paper.
Yeah.
And that's why I think he's someone who defines college football, is because he was an overall college player, and the way he led them to two championships, you can't deny that it was very impressive.
Tebow actually changed college football in a way.
Okay.
Because before Tebow, quarterbacks didn't do what Tebow did. Tebow was a run-first quarterback. I'm going to do whatever I need to do for my team to win.
Mm-hmm.
He did everything. He did trick plays. And plus, he didn't throw that well, but the system that they ran worked for Tebow.
I mean, he still put up 16 interceptions, and he put up 9,000 passing yards.
Over 60% completions, too.
I mean, maybe his form wasn't as good, but he knew what to do with the ball when the ball was in his hand.
And you see more colleges now are doing that Tebow offense, the Wildcat.
Yeah,
different formations.
Even like Denard Robinson at Michigan, someone who's now going to play receiver in the NFL, was a great quarterback, a great college quarterback.
Yeah, for sure.
But it may not translate to the NFL just because it's a different game and it's faster. But in college, it works like a charm, and Tebow was the best at it.
But you also got to remember, in college, you're playing against, you know, some freshmen, sophomores.
Yeah.
You're not playing against, like, experience.
You got to play against an 18-year-old kid in college.
Yeah, you know.
Where you can in just NFL, that's not
pick
happen.
On him in a game. Like, okay, it's a red-shirt freshman out here. Okay, let's get to him.
Yeah.
Usually, a red-shirt freshman is guarding an experienced junior or something. That's a matchup in college you can take, you know, all day. And Tebow, you know, most of his – if you watch his games in college – most of his plays wasn't very complex. They were very simple, to the point we're going to pick out the mismatch. And then he had Aaron Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. He had Aaron Hernandez.
And not just Aaron Hernandez. He had quite a few other people,
too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had weapons around him that they did most of the work. He threw, like, simple 5-6-yard routes, and they turned it into, like, 40-yard completions.
Well, we've talked about the workhorses. Now, I mean, we've talked about the quarterbacks, but let's get on to the workhorses that we haven't talked about in Herschel Walker, Barry Sanders, Earl Campbell, and Archie Griffin. I know that we've pretty much consensus here that maybe Tebow is the best college football player on this list, but who is the best running back then on this list?
Gotta go to Herschel.
Oh, that's a tough one, though.
I say Herschel over Barry because Barry had one good season, and I mean 37 touchdowns and over 2,000 yards rushing in a season. That's, you know, that's amazing. But Herschel has a ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And he has the most touchdowns too. Yeah. 49. Definitely. But Archie Griffin was a great player too.
I mean, only got to win two Heismans.
5,589 yards rushing. 26. He didn't have that many rushing touchdowns, but I mean. This is beyond our scope. We didn't watch Archie Griffin play, obviously. Yeah. We're younger than that.
Yeah.
But to have 26 rushing touchdowns, he had 350 yards receiving, which is nothing, which is back then is very good.
Yeah.
That's kind of an impressive stat there. And a receiving touchdown. And the two Heisman trophies, that right there says it all to me. Someone who can win two Heismans.
Although at Ohio State, he didn't manage to win any championships. So that's a little weird that he had.
Yeah.
Two Heisman seasons at Ohio State, and they couldn't win a championship.
Yeah, it is different. That is something to look at, but also his stats are undeniably the best on the list.
Yeah.
Unless you look at, like you said, Barry Sanders, 2,628 yards in a season. That's hard to beat,
too. That means he was running through, around, and
he was doing everything
underneath everybody's defense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Earl Campbell's nothing to sneeze at either. He's got over 4,000 in his career, 40 rushing touchdowns, a touchdown caught, and that's playing at UT. And then Ricky Williams had a great 1998 season for Texas. I didn't even put him on this list. There's all sorts of running backs out there that we didn't even mention. But, I mean, it's a hard choice, I think.
Once you look at the Heisman list, the complete Heisman list, and just see all the players, you see how great you really have to be to get that trophy.
Yeah.
And for Johnny Football to get as a freshman, you know, he's only, what, 19, 20?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he was a young guy.
He's pretty young.
I don't think it really hit him yet that, you know, he's in an elite category.
Mm-hmm. And like, he's being watched all the time.
Especially because he has more Twitter followers than A&M, the SEC, and like three other things combined.
He's up there with, like, LeBron and Carmelo.
Yeah.
For real. Like, I saw that before I came up here. Like, his followers.
There's NFL players that he has more followers on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy.
And I feel like if he, by some miracle, ends up with a Texas team and is their quarterback and does well.
He's going to be the polarizing figure.
If he was to end up with the Cowboys or something, which that could easily happen.
Yeah.
Then he's going to be
the biggest target on anyone's back ever in the history of anything.
Yes. And he'll have more pressure on him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
It'll be a LeBron in Cleveland
all over again.
Probably times two.
LeBron first year in Miami pressure. That's how much pressure it's going to be. More than that even. So we'll see what happens. So you guys are going to say Tim Tebow is your best college player then?
I mean, he has a Heisman and two championships. I mean, he hands down, he won championships. Two out of the 4 years, he won a ring.
And he was the leader. He was just the central
absolute
figure.
Leader.
Leader in every regard of that football team.
Yeah. But, I mean, it just goes to show you how hard Archie Griffin had to work to get two Heisman trophies if Tim Tebow couldn't get two Heisman trophies.
Yeah, exactly.
First, third, fifth.
I don't think nobody in today's game is going to get two Heismans because there's just so many players. Everybody has a breakout season.
So you don't think Johnny Football will?
I honestly don't think he can repeat.
You think there'll be some other breakout?
There's going to be some other breakout. Like the receiver from Clemson, Sammy Watkins, I think that's his name. I really think he has a shot to win it.
And honestly, I mean, Johnny Football doesn't have as good of a line this year. He doesn't have a lot of people returning on defense, so the offense is going to be on the field more. I mean, you could see him struggle. They've got a tough season.
I honestly think, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Cooper, but I honestly think I see him repeating.
Okay.
I really do. Because I don't see his stats getting worse.
Okay.
And I don't see any other person being able to do what he can do.
Ohio State quarterback Braxton Miller. He's taller.
Okay.
He's a little bit faster.
Well, how about this, guys? Let's put it down right now. Who's your Heisman prediction?
Is it I think Johnny Football wins it again.
Okay,
I think it's Braxton Miller.
Okay. I'm just going to have to play the field on this one. I'm going to take the field at large. I think that's a safe bet.
So you're taking everyone else.
Anyone besides Johnny
Someone
Football.
Someone doesn't sound fair about that.
Well, hey, I'm the producer. So. All right, so guys, put it down in your notebooks, all of our fans out there. We've got our Heisman picks for this year, and I'm sure we'll do a college football preview and talk more about this later on, closer to the season. But right now, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back, talk more about Johnny Manziel, of course, and then we'll move on to the Rangers and the Cowboys. This is KETR's Locker Room.
Okay, you ready for a win-win scenario? If you've got an unwanted car, boat, or truck taking up valuable space, why not consider donating it to your station? You simply call, set up an appointment to have it hauled away, provide the signed title, and then you'll get a tax receipt when it sells. Plus, the proceeds will help provide the programming you love right here on KETR. Simply call 855-KETR-123 and speak with our representative today.
Warmer days are finally here, and public radio listeners are busy spending time outdoors, reading books, renting movies, and planning their upcoming winter vacations. Can your business help them enjoy these leisure activities? If so, consider program sponsorships on KETR 903-513-9684.
All right, folks, we're back. Cooper Welch, Taylor Phelps, and Jordan Davis with you once again. All right, guys, so we talked a lot about Johnny Manziel in the first segment of today, and we got a lot more to talk about him. There's a lot of news about him. First, I want to just ask the question, is the spotlight that Johnny Manziel is under fair? Now, let me tell you what's going on with him. He is taking all online classes. This is the first big hullabaloo about him. Taking all online classes this next year instead of attending class on campus. Then he reportedly tweeted about wanting to leave A&M during the spring semester. Now, after this, he left the Archie Manning quarterback camp early, reportedly due to dehydration illness, after missing a few practices and meetings, didn't show up, slept in. But there are allegations that he was partying the night before, and that's the real reason he missed. Now, the Mannings all said they have a good relationship with him, that he didn't party, he just was sick, had to go home. But, I mean, we're hearing a lot of, like, Chris Mortensen reported on it. He said that it was partying. So, I don't know what to say there.
That would not be a huge surprise either for Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
And this came out right after the party allegations. He has now pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge for failing to identify himself to police during a fight that led to his arrest in June of 2012. Now, the backstory behind this is this happened last year, and he was in a fight at a party or a bar or something. He was drinking, partying, you know, whatever. And he got in a fight and had a fake driver's license on him that he showed to the cops. Now, that's a Class B misdemeanor here in Texas, and that can get you up to 180 days in jail. And then he also had a Class C misdemeanor for fighting, but both of those were thrown out by a Brazos County judge, so he only had to serve 2 days in jail. And he already served those 2 days in jail for getting arrested for the fight anyway, so he doesn't actually have any jail time. He just has to pay like a $2,000 fine. So he got out of 180 days in jail. So, but what do you guys think? Is the spotlight on Johnny Manziel unfair?
I don't think it's unfair.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Okay. If you're looking for that kind of spotlight, you're the type of athlete who wants to play in the NFL and wants to be a Heisman Trophy winner, you're going to have that spotlight on
right,
you.
Right.
I mean, that just comes with the territory. So I don't understand. Is it fair? Who knows if it's really fair, but it's going to happen. It's not going to happen, so it's not something you need to worry about whether it's fair or not. It's you need to get your act together and realize that, you know, I think he's still a kid, and I think he's under the impression that these things aren't going to really affect him when they can.
Yeah.
When we see players every year in the NFL draft drop. Well, that drop is a loss of money. Mm-hmm. And every time they keep dropping further and further, you know, that's less money on their first contract. And that's something that Johnny needs to look at if he wants to be an NFL quarterback like we assume that he does.
Mm-hmm. I think when you're a Heisman Trophy winner, all the attention goes to you, especially if you're a young one. Because
I mean, he's the first freshman ever.
Next season, everybody's going to be talking about A&M. What can they do? What can Johnny do? So, I mean, you already put yourself in a level of popularity when you win it.
Right.
So when you, of course, when you're seen partying and doing stupid stuff with your friends, okay, that's one thing. But like taking all online classes, I can see why he did that.
Yeah, I understand that completely.
I can understand that.
Okay.
But tweeting that you want to leave A&M and you just won a Heisman there, I don't understand that. That's drawing more attention to yourself.
And he took it down, but I mean, it was there.
He's been notorious for tweeting things that he takes off Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Which, once it's out there, know about it. You can't delete it, and it didn't happen.
Yes.
So things like that, and I think even after the fact, he tweeted something about loving A&M, or he was just having a rough, I don't know what it was, but that's just childish stuff. He is the central face of the university.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There is nothing that brings more students there right now than Johnny Manziel. And he'll be that for the rest of his life. The rest of his life, he'll be the ultimate ambassador
for A&M.
For A&M.
Especially because they weren't really, I mean, no offense to Aggies, but they weren't that relevant up until this year.
Oh, no, because when Tannehill there was like a third place team in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was Tannehill.
But with Manziel, I mean, like we're talking about, he is a lot more than just the quarterback at Texas A&M. Now, we talked about online classes. I understand that completely. Mm-hmm. He's going to have way too much of a spotlight on him. I talked to people that knew Robert Griffin before he won the Heisman and after he won the Heisman at Baylor, just regular students. Before, saw him all the time, walked around campus. He was just the quarterback at Baylor, and we didn't know who Robert Griffin was. We knew who he was, but we wouldn't have known him walking through the Super Mall or Walmart. Now, once he became a Heisman Trophy winner, a lot less side of him on the Baylor campus, just because he's a celebrity then.
Yeah.
Now, while Baylor's a lot smaller campus at about 15,000 students, I think, compared to A&M at 45,000.
Exactly.
People saw him regularly, RG3, but it was a lot less. So Johnny Manziel is someone who can barely even go, you know, out of his house, which is a problem for a 20-year-old college kid who's, you know, just wants to have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, we saw the huge following that just Colt McCoy got when he was the UT quarterback.
No, and that's very comparable.
Yeah, and he had to wear disguises to fly on planes. It got to that point, and there was people that found out where he lived when he lived, you know, a good 30 miles outside of Austin, that came to his house and threw stuff through his windows. I mean, you got to protect yourself nowadays.
And one of the problems is you're a college student, too. Mm-hmm. You don't have – now, while Johnny Manziel definitely has some deep pockets, as we've seen recently, even with some of his tweets, you still aren't as wealthy as you would be in the NFL to protect yourself. And that's one problem that maybe A&M needs to look at in protecting him and helping him out instead of kind of just – and I'm sure they are, but just leaving him to – you know, do his own thing.
Yeah. Well, you brought up Robert Griffin and talked about him. And this is a little off topic, but I wanted to talk about it while I'm thinking about Baylor. I heard on ESPN radio today that Baylor got rings for their bowl game win over UCLA this last season. What do you guys think about that? Them getting rings, like championship size rings for winning a bowl game?
Well, first of all, it's Baylor.
Okay.
And I mean, if you think about it, a program like Baylor getting to a bowl game, that's an accomplishment.
That's true.
And the fact that in that bowl game, they were underdogs. They were supposed to lose that game. So, I mean, when my friend Kobe Hamilton went to Arkansas, University of Arkansas, they had like Rolex watches when they won the Liberty Bowl against Eastern Carolina.
I think it's pretty normal to get something when you go to the bowl game.
Yeah.
Maybe something for playing in it usually is more from the NCAA or from whoever's running the bowl game. Yeah, you're gonna get something, but to get a ring, you know, I think that's I don't see any problem with it.
Accomplishment.
Well, what about this? This is something I left off. He told the ringmakers to put the score on that winning score as 49-19. Now, the actual score of the game is 49-26. Now, the reason this happened is because on the last touchdown play that UCLA got, the player was actually recognized as being 4 or 5 yards short of the end zone, but they gave him a touchdown anyway. Art Briles, already up, you know, over 19 points, said, no, we want to fight this. We don't want this touchdown to count. But the refs all said it counts. So Art Briles said, well, on our rings, it's going to say 49-19. So what do you guys think about that?
I mean, well, now that I know the full story, okay, I can deal with that. Because to them, we know they only scored 19 points. Mm-hmm. We know they gave them the extra touchdown. Because if you think about it, if he's 4 or 5 yards short, the referee just gave it to him. Like, hey, you're already up by like 20-something points.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Get his stats up.
Yeah.
But for the coach, I think that's a good message to send to the team. Like, yo, we did this. You know, like 46-19. I don't care what ESPN say. We know it's 19, so that's what we're gonna go by.
I can see it both ways. It does seem kind of a little bit childish to me. Just put the real score on there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people are gonna remember the score being. I mean, I'm assuming that's what's on the trophy.
Probably. Yeah,
so I don't see really I don't see it being that big of a deal. I mean, who really cares what the. You won the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you won by one or if you won 40-0. You won the bowl. So,
you know,
why do something so childish like that? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's beyond me.
I mean, some of them kids on that team never won a championship before. So to get some type of ring for all the hard work, I mean, I think as a coach, that's a good reward to give all your players because you worked hard for that bowl win. I think they won, like, what, 8 games last year?
Yeah, they had a really good season, especially without Robert Griffin.
Yeah,
on the team.
And people expect them to win like 4 without Robert Griffin, and they went to a bowl game. So,
and
I mean,
won the bowl game.
And won against a Pac-12 opponent.
Yeah.
So I was shocked because that quarterback they got, he's pretty good.
What do you guys think? This is a recruiting tool? You think a lot of kids will come in and say, I want to play for a coach like that? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean.
I think it looks as someone who wants to stick up for his players, but but still, no one's going to come in and go, wow, you put the score on the ring that supposedly no one's going to care. You know, they're going to care about the new stadium Baylor's building, and they're going to care about who the other players are and the coach's perspective and what am I going to get, not of past what happened. They won a bowl game. That's good enough. Nobody's going to care about the score.
Right. Okay. Well, let's get back on track with Johnny Manziel then. What do you guys expect from Johnny this season? Now, we saw his stats, you know, over 3,000 yards passing, 26 touchdown throws, 9 interceptions, 1,400 rushing yards, 21 rushing touchdowns, and a Heisman. Do you think he improves? Do you think he drops? Do you think he stays the same? What do you guys think? More wins?
I think we see greatness.
Okay.
Like we've seen all along. There will be a new receiver in there. Rick Sills-Jones is a 5-star recruit. Number one ranked receiver on Rivals and Yahoo. I think number 8 on ESPN. But if you're in top 10 in receivers, high school in the nation, you're good.
Yeah.
So that's another addition. Now, why you said the line might be less than it was. Still, Manziel's ability to—he's not really a pocket quarterback, being able to avoid pressure and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, losing Luke Jokel.
I mean, that's don't get me wrong. I'm not dissing Luke Jokel here.
Second overall pick, wasn't he?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I also know what Johnny Manziel can do, and
that's
what changes things for me. And I don't see the stats being any less, if not being improved.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're gonna see more. Definitely more passing yards and less rushing yards this year from Johnny Football. He's gone to the Manning Academy. He's been working out with other famous quarterbacks. I really think he's going to show this season that I can throw.
I'm an NFL quarterback, too.
I'm not just a runner.
Yeah.
So I suspect, like, way more. I think he's going to have, like, 4,000 passing yards. Probably have almost 30 touchdowns because, I mean, the attack that they have.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's possible.
I see him putting up a huge.
But I see
numbers.
Him throwing maybe about 2 more interceptions.
Okay.
Because, you know, 11, he's going to be throwing the ball more, so I suspect more interceptions if you throw the ball more. And like I said, the 1,400 yards rushing, a person I went to high school with, Trey Carson, is now their running back, and he's a pretty good one. He just came from Oregon, and he backed up LaMichael James. So most of the load is going to go to him. So I think he's going to try to show people, hey, I can be a pocket passer.
Right. Okay. Well, what about if you were in Johnny's position, would you use all of your eligibility? I think he has, what, 3 years left, right, because
he was a
freshman?
3 years.
And go for more awards and maybe a national championship or two, or go to the NFL as soon as you can, which I think he's eligible after this year because he's old enough, and take the guaranteed money?
Staying in college.
Okay.
Honestly, I heard all my friends that play Division I says college football is, like, the greatest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every Saturday you're playing in a new place. And, I mean, if I was Johnny Football, I'm young. I mean, I have money already. But the NFL is going to be there. Like, why not stay and get a degree So when I get done playing football, I have a plan B. I can make more money on top of my money. And plus, it's college football. Not many people get to experience Division I football at Texas A&M.
That's true.
And
you're
in the SEC. So every week you're going to be on TV. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, these two last 3 years, he can get way better. And by the time he goes to the NFL, be a first-round pick. Because right now he's not a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. He's like fourth, late fourth-round pick because he's 6 foot. And he has a lot of mechanics to work on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't leave College Station if I'm Johnny.
I think what I think he should do and what Johnny thinks he's going to do are one and the same. I think that he's going to leave after next year. I would advise him to leave as soon as he can to get money, because we all know an NFL career is not that long. And who knows when it's going to be stopped. Who knows when it's going to be stopped short. Quarterback's a little longer if you're able to make it. But as far as the NFL, it's a lot different than any other sport because it's so hard on your body. Yeah. You never know when your career is going to end. So I would advise him to go as soon as he can, which is probably next year. And if he puts up close to the same numbers, we look at quarterbacks like Russell Wilson, smaller, shorter quarterbacks have been able to produce. And I think he's someone who can produce in the NFL, especially if he puts up, you know, close to the same numbers. And like Jordan said, he can maybe show his pocket passing ability a little better. So I don't think he's in love with A&M. I don't think he's someone who's like, I love this school. Yeah. I want to stay here as long as I can. I think Tebow was a lot more passionate about Florida than Manziel is about A&M. I think A&M is a stepping stone for him to get to the NFL. He's not someone who's like, you know, A&M is my home and I love it here and I'm going to take every advantage I can.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that, and Tim Tebow is a great example because he was also, you know, more of a character guy. I mean, no offense to Johnny Manziel, but Tim Tebow was never out partying that we heard about. He you don't have to worry about him doing crazy stuff because
we just go jail time.
Yeah,
and then we can judge character by that.
Yeah,
but and, I mean, Tebow actually loved playing with
Tim Tebow wanted to be in Florida.
Yeah,
he grew up in Florida. That was his home.
If Tebow could play at the university right now, he probably would.
He'd do it. He would. And Johnny Manziel grew up a UT fan. Like, he wanted to be at UT.
I saw a picture of him the other day. He has a UT tattoo.
Yeah.
He has a Longhorn tattoo on his ribcage.
He's trading.
And he got turned down by UT. Now, I bet they're saying it's the biggest mistake they ever made.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
But
especially with what they've added recently.
Yeah.
But, I mean, A&M, if all in all, A&M has helped Johnny realize that, okay, I'm definitely a target. I'm definitely popular. And I mean, A&M is a big college town too.
Yeah.
So at the same time, I mean, he may not love A&M, but I'm guarantee you he loved the atmosphere.
Oh, for sure.
Because I mean, he's around hot chicks. He's always in the spotlight. And whatever team he goes to, that team will instantly get like Tebow all over again.
Oh yeah. Like, it's gonna be Tebow. It's going to be Tebow again. It's a second coming.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think he's also going to be a little bit humbled when he goes to the NFL because it's going to be other people that are just as good as you.
I think if he doesn't humble himself, like you said, he'll be humbled.
Oh, somebody in the NFL.
Somebody wants to humble him.
We'll humble him.
Yeah, he'll get at least laid out, you know,
at least
in practice
once
or something.
That first hit, he's going to open his eyes and say, okay, it's the NFL.
All right, guys. Well, let's – I got one more breaking thing to talk about on the SEC. The SEC commissioner was talking, I don't know what program he was on, but he was talking about the NCAA and how he thinks the SEC and the Big 12 and other organizations are doing more for their student athletes than the NCAA itself is. And it wasn't a threat, but he talked about how what could be different with the SEC, the Big 12, and all the others getting together and leaving the NCAA.
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys think would happen? And how much do you think it would hurt or help college sports if the NCAA wasn't around anymore?
If the SEC, that conference by itself, leaves the NCAA, there is no NCAA. Because the SEC is like the Miami Heat in basketball. Everybody compares themselves to the SEC.
Right.
So they bring in the most money, in football at least. I mean, they had, what, 7 straight national championships go to the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away the SEC, it's like all these average conferences going against each other, and you don't see just one dominant, you know, conference. Like every player in the SEC is big, fast, physical. Like, they're going to the league at some point in time. Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at the future NFL when you look at SEC. So if they separate themselves from the Division I NCAA, it's like, okay, who do we watch now? Like, who are we going to compare ourselves to? Texas? They haven't did nothing since Vince Young. Lord forsaken. But I think this will be bad for the NCAA as a whole, because more conferences are going to be like, well, we don't have any competition because the SEC is everybody's competition. Right. So
if the SEC is to leave, then you'll see other people leave. There'll probably be four major power conferences that develop,
Big 12,
like
Big 10, 12, Pac-12.
Excuse me, just hit my microphone into my face. But you'll see four different probably power conferences, about 15, 16 teams. So you'll still have about 60 teams competing for a national championship. Mm-hmm. Now, the organization will be different, and there'll probably be more incentives for the players. You'll probably see players paid. So yeah. I think what's going to happen is you'll see the NCAA catering more to the SEC mm-hmm. and these power conferences to maintain control of championships, then you will see them leave. I think they're starting to believe that's going to happen because they might be aligning to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think eventually it's going to come to the point where, you know, we need the NCAA structure. If you'll do A, B, and C, you know, we can make this work.
Right.
And I think that's what we're more going to see in the future. Mm-hmm. And as we can see, it takes the NCAA forever to make anything happen. To make playoff systems takes 5 and 6 years before we ever see any progress. So I definitely think we're going to see the SEC's control more exercised on the NCAA than we have in the past.
Well, do you guys think it's time for a new governing organization to be made for colleges? Like maybe an actual government-run organization?
Yes, because if you think about it, the players these days in college football are way different from back in the day. These players are putting people in seats. Like, these schools that never had sellouts are having sellouts. Like,
oh, yeah, all the time.
Money is being spent in college nowadays, like with weight training facilities, new jerseys. Like, the way the world is shaping up, you have to spend money to make money. Mm-hmm. And colleges these days are spending the money to get these players. And something has to be done, because if you think about it, the players, in a way, should be paid. They're the reason why these fans come in every Saturday, Thursday.
I see Manziel shirts all the time.
What?
Oh, yeah.
He's selling out.
Highs Manziel or whatever. Yes. Crazy shirts. And, I mean, I'm assuming he's not getting any compensation for it. He's not supposed to be, but
never know.
I could maybe think that he is.
Maybe A&M, you know, because he's putting these players are helping the universities out more than anything because they're having more people say, I want to go there because so and so there. I want to go to Michigan because Denard Robinson went there. Like, these athletes are bringing exposure to these programs that some of them never had before. Like, right. A&M always had a program.
And like you're saying, I think the talent is more dispersed. Like, there's more good teams than there was before.
Yes. Yeah.
You've always had ambassadors. You've always had the greats come and talk to the new recruits and let them know why you should attend the University of Oklahoma or the University of Texas. But now we're seeing that everywhere.
Yeah.
Why you should attend Abilene Christian. Yeah. Why you should attend Texas A&M Commerce. Because I was able to make a career out of it at going to a Division II school. Right. And I think when we start to see such a broad collection of talent, there's so much talent out there that is when you have some problems.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's end that topic for the day and let's move on to the Rangers. Got a lot of stuff going on with them. Now, they lost 3 of 4 to the Tigers, so that wasn't too good. But they broke Max Scherzer's 13-0 record. So that's pretty
always
good to talk
about. Break a record. That's always good.
You broke his record. You stopped him from being the best pitcher since Roger Clemens in 98. So that's impressive.
I know he's mad.
Max Scherzer hates the Rangers right now.
I'm sure he does.
But more bad news for the Rangers. Yu Darvish is now on the 15-day DL. The Rangers now trail Oakland by 2 games at the All-Star break, are in 4th place in the AL. They are 3 games behind Boston, 2 games behind Oakland, and a 1/2 game behind Tampa Bay. So what do you guys think of the Rangers? Do you think they'll make the playoffs? You think
it's always hard to judge someone right before the All-Star break just because players, you know, the baseball season, and it's harder in baseball than it is in the NBA because just it's such a so much a longer season. But, you know, three or four games of the Tigers. Tigers are good. I'm not too hung up on that. But Yu Darvish is a spot to look at and kind of a flashing red light as, oh, let's get our act together here. Yeah. But we really need to see what happens after. Two games back to Oakland. Mm-hmm. Now, while we saw the Oakland kid, Cespedes, just kill the ball out of the ballpark last night in the home run derby.
I've never seen nobody hit a ball that hard.
495 feet.
I still think the Rangers can't compete with Oakland and make a push for the playoffs, if not to win the division, at least that wild card spot.
If he's swinging like that, Oakland's going to win that division. Okay. I'm sorry. He is.
They're also not lofting the ball at him at 60 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Not. I mean, who knows? Cespedes might be caught for something because that was that was ridiculous, the display he put on. He's innocent until proven guilty, but but the way he was hitting the ball last night,
good Lord.
And I know we're hung up on one guy in the lineup, but you know, as a team, I definitely think the Rangers are in a tight spot right now to make the playoffs, but I will start to see more separation, hopefully, in the Rangers' favor as we continue after the All-Star break.
I say during this 15-day deal, if they can win at least 9 to 10 games, they'll be fine.
Right.
Anything less than 9 games is going to be hard because Boston's playing good. Oakland's playing good, and Tampa Bay has a good pitching staff. So
Baltimore's playing good.
Oh, yeah, Chris Davis is knocking out homers left and right.
37 now?
He made me mad because I was like, he's going to win the All-Star, the home run derby, because he has 37. If Miguel was in there, Miguel would have won it. But Chris Davis was everybody's favorite to win because Robinson Cano disappointed everybody.
They had
4 homers.
That was sad.
David Wright only had, like, what, 5? Mm-hmm. And he was hosting the event.
Doesn't it always seem, though, like there's one or two guys that really are going after it, and then a couple guys that are like, oh, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's more the players that got something to prove are the ones that go after it.
Because Bryce Harper, 20 years old, and he hit the truck. Like, he was hitting the ball at a point. I'm like, this kid cannot be just 20.
Yeah.
He has, like, the next question, should the Rangers have played in the home run? No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's what I was just looking at on here. And no. I'm going, I'm kind of squinting my eyes like, should a Ranger, why?
No, because a Ranger, that home run derby, that was the first one in a long time where I actually seen hitters, like home run hitters, pure power hitters, because – oh, my God. Whatever his name is.
Cespedes.
That man right there, 17 in the first round.
Yeah.
He was trying to make a point because he didn't make the All-Star team. So he was slinging for the fences because he's like, hey, I didn't make the All-Star team. I should have made it.
What do you think would have happened if Puig had been in the home run derby?
It would have been a lot higher ratings.
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, I would have been watching it. I don't know, something about that kid.
And
he wasn't even on the topic for us to talk about today, but he comes up because he's just – something about him is fascinating
as a baseball player. He wanted to be in the home run derby to compete with the other Cuban. And the other Cuban that won, he said, I would like to challenge him. And that would have been great for Major League Baseball. Like,
for
these
sure.
two people talking trash and going out here hitting home runs, that's baseball player's dream. Oh, you want to talk trash? Let's go out here and hit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but no Ranger. I don't even see nobody on the roster that would have compete.
The Rangers need to lay low during the All-Star break and then come out with a bang afterwards and hope that they can make the playoffs.
That's how
they're,
all
they're
Dallas
a good team.
Teams need to be. All of them.
I agree.
What do you guys think this is the best time for Yu Darvish to get hurt? Like, I mean, if you're going to get hurt when you have a 6-day break where nobody's playing.
Yeah.
I would say so, I would definitely think that if you're going to take time off, you need to take it either right before the All-Star break, during, or immediately. You need to either take it a while before. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would have been better for him to be injured before this point.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to take a little bit of time off during the All-Star break, use that to your advantage, and then come out after that, I think is the best possible time for anyone to be a 15-day thing.
Yeah.
If you're out a month or, exactly. Mm-hmm. But 15-day, couldn't ask for a better situation.
I definitely say before because you're a pitcher. And unlike a hitter, you know, a hitter, you can kind of slump a little bit because you have to get your, you know, swing back. But as a pitcher, if you're off by the littlest amount, like, it could cost you runs.
If your velocity's down, if you don't get it right where you want it on the plate, I mean, it's done.
And it's going to take you, Darvish, maybe a couple of games to get his rhythm back. Because as a pitcher, I mean, especially in the division they play in, they have hitters. In the AL.
For sure.
Like, I'm picking them to win the All-Star game tonight because they have hitters.
Okay.
Yeah, they do. When we talk about, and let's talk about the All-Star game. Do you think it's fair that the All-Star game determines home field advantage in the World Series?
I mean, I think it's fair. It gives us something for the players to compete for because you think about it in the NBA All-Star game, I heard that the winning team gets like extra money than the losing team.
Get a lot. Yeah, they get a lot of money.
So I mean,
but to them,
that's like $3 to them.
Yeah.
But in baseball, I think this gives that's why the All-Star games over the years been so competitive because teams want that home field advantage. The home field advantage in the World Series, that's an edge up on your opponent, especially
it's a huge edge.
Especially,
do you think it's unfair though if a team has some people who are like, I'm not making the playoffs?
Yeah.
So why do I care?
What if even like there's no the person from the AL gets to the World Series? There's one person from Oakland on the AL All Stars. The AL All Stars lose. It's not Oakland's fault, and they have no home. Yeah.
When I was thinking about this earlier, I thought to myself, you know, the baseball season's so long. Mm-hmm. It's not really fair at the end of the season, in my opinion, to say okay. You had a better record, so you're gonna get it. And they don't play as interdivision as much as in the NBA. And the NBA
they do more now.
All over. They do more now, but I still don't think 160 games. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of games to say, okay, you won, you know, 90 games and you won 89, so you get home field advantage.
Right.
This kind of, you know, centralizes it all, makes the All-Star game more enjoyable to watch. Yeah,
definitely.
Especially in baseball.
Especially in the All-Star game, every year you see them couple of teams that's really trying to make a playoff push. Their main player that makes the All-Star game, he comes in there trying to make a statement like, trying to get my team here.
I'm trying to. Like, we want to win the World Series.
We
want
to win.
I'm going to take advantage of my at-bats. And
right.
And every year you see at least one player that go in the All-Star game and play like it's a regular season game and go all out. And I think somebody from the AL, I mean, just looking at the pitching staff, I mean, they got Scherzer, and he's 13-1 against Matt Harvey. And, I mean, nothing against Matt Harvey. But Scherzer, I mean, the AL has, to me, a better pitching staff than the National League.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we don't have much time left. We're already at 47 minutes in this show. So we're going to skip the first part of our Cowboys discussion today, and we're going to talk just about the schedule. Now, the first preseason game is just 3 weeks away against Miami in the Hall of Fame game. What are your guys' predictions for the Cowboys season? Now, we've got the schedule printed off. I know you guys listening can't see it, but we've got New York Giants at home, then the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City, St. Louis at home, Chargers in San Diego, Broncos at home, Redskins at home. That's two back-to-back home games. That's pretty good. At Philadelphia, at Detroit, looks like Minnesota at home, New Orleans at New Orleans, the Giants at the Giants. And then for our Thanksgiving game is against Oakland at home. Then we got the Bears in Chicago. We got the Packers at home, the Redskins at Washington, and the Philadelphia Eagles at home to end the season. So what do you guys think is the possibilities here?
Just because they got Oakland at home on Thanksgiving, I'm saying 9-7.
Okay.
I would say 10, but the last two games, Washington and Philadelphia, I mean, Robert Griffin and then Michael Vick back-to-back, I mean, that might a little down the stretch be too much for the Cowboys.
And the Cowboys' divisional record the past few seasons has not been good.
Yes, and then they start off with the Giants, which has never been good. Mm-hmm. I see them winning Kansas City. I see them beating St. Louis and San Diego. I think Peyton Manning's going to be too much for them. Once again,
that's going to be a really good team.
Yes. Yeah.
That's going to be a very good team, especially early on in the season.
New Orleans, I see them beating them and Minnesota. Chicago is going to be a tough one for the Cowboys just because the Bears always have good defense. And Green Bay, I mean Aaron Rodgers. Okay. Discount double check.
So you're 9-7.
I think we talked about this earlier. I say playoffs.
You say playoffs.
I definitely think playoffs are going to happen, and I think the Cowboys should start the season 4-0. Worst case scenario, 3-1 with a loss to the Giants and going to Denver.
I could see that.
You know, and that's very real. That's a very real possibility. Start the season 4-0 for the Cowboys with the schedule they have, playing Kansas City, St. Louis, and San Diego 3 in a row. Hopefully, that builds up a little confidence. Maybe we play Denver at Denver and we kind of get it handed to us and we take a step back and we say, okay, we're good, but we can get better.
Yeah.
And I hope that the schedule this year lines up for the Cowboys the way it needs to. The problem I see
is
the last four games, like you said, in
every
a self-destruction.
Year. Every
because
year.
You have Chicago, Green Bay, Washington, and Philadelphia, with the last four games all being on the road.
Yes.
And that's going to be a very tough stretch.
No, it's 2-2.
Oh, is it two and two?
It's 2-2.
Yeah, it is. Oh,
okay,
two and
I see.
It.
Yeah,
at Chicago
it is two and two.
At Washington.
Yeah. But at Chicago and at Washington, those are going to be games where maybe at home should definitely be a win, but on the road is going to be a lot tougher.
Iffy.
And then Green Bay and Philadelphia.
Two
I don't really know what's
going
to happen to Philadelphia, but I could see them being good. And those are two games that are going to be tough, especially Green Bay. And Aaron Rodgers is always going to be tough. But if we can start the season 4-0 or 3-1, I think that there's a lot of breathing room there, and maybe they'll play a little more relaxed, and I think they'll get to the playoffs.
Right. All right, well then, last question for today. Who are you guys' Cowboys players to watch this season? Now, I know you guys researched different parts of the field, so you wouldn't have convergence. So, Taylor, tell us what you researched first.
I did a little research on the offensive side of the ball.
Okay.
And Dwayne Harris last year was a punt returner, kick returner, after we kind of realized, well, Dez Bryant doesn't really need to be doing that and slamming his body against people when he's a number one receiver.
Yes.
But definitely a problem with the Cowboys has been the third receiver. And we kind of saw Ogletree fill that, but now he's gone. Mm-hmm. But we look at Dwayne Harris, a guy who was the third receiver spot last year for about the last seven games. Mm-hmm. He had 17 catches for 222 yards. You know, we kind of got Terrence Williams as someone to fill that spot, but Terrence Williams fell in the draft. He had some issues, and he was from Baylor, but it'd be nice if he could just get some playing time without having a lot of responsibility on him.
Right.
And Dwayne Harris was a guy who was second in NFL in yards per punt return last year when he took over at that point. And just a guy who's very explosive and catches the ball in open field and can make moves. I see him as being definitely an offensive guy who could come out and surprise. The other guys I see being pretty set. I see Miles Austin out there. I see Dez Bryant, Jason Witten. But we could see Gavin Escobar, the Cowboys pick, as Jason Witten's getting a little older. The guy's 6'6", 254 pounds, does not block well at all. That was his big drawback.
Right.
But he's got hands better than anybody you could ask for. Great, talented receiver, and as a redshirt freshman, started 12 of 13 games at San Diego State. Just his hands are incredible. So he's in right now catching passes, people are going, wow, this guy's awesome. You know, he could be huge for us. Then you get him in the game, and he can't block anybody, and that's a big problem. So Jason Witten's definitely going to be getting the most of the minutes. But Escobar's a guy you put in there. He can get up the seam and catch a few balls. The last guy, first draft pick, Travis Frederick. I don't see any of the other draft picks late in the draft really making any noise or any pickups.
Not even Terrence Williams?
Terrence Williams is like a volume type guy. He's like one of the streaky receivers.
Okay. I see Dwayne Harris kind of taking that role, and I think Terrence Williams will come in and get a few snaps here and there. Miles Austin could very easily get hurt.
Yeah.
And that could easily throw Terrence Williams in there. But I think Terrence Williams will compete with Dwayne Harris, but I do see Dwayne Harris probably winning that position.
Okay.
And definitely getting some reps, if not winning the third spot.
Okay.
As far as linemen, though, we picked up Travis Frederick, Wisconsin, a guy who's very big and very good at center. Hopefully cures our center issues of snapping the ball over Tony Romo's head.
Ugh.
But one of the biggest problems with him was he's a part of a unit at Wisconsin that allowed 28 sacks last year.
Ugh.
So that's not good when you look at Tony Romo's and his sack history of having linemen that allow people to get through the gaps.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you know, with some Cowboy coaching, I don't know how good that sounds, but he's a good interior guy, and hopefully if he can snap the ball to Tony every time, he's better than are pass centers. So those are about my three guys that I'm looking at on offense that could probably make an impact differently from Tony Romo, your main guys that have been starters for the past few seasons.
All right. Well, Jordan, what did you research?
I went on the defensive side of the ball, on the new 4-3 defense that they have.
Okay.
And three players that I picked out are three important people besides DeMarcus Ware. The rookie, Morris Claiborne. He had 43 tackles, a forced fumble, and an interception. I mean, he probably had a good rookie cornerback season since Deion. Of course, Deion was better. But
ridiculous.
But for a rookie, that's pretty solid. To have 43 tackles, that means he was getting in the plays. He was getting in the trenches. He was making plays. Mm-hmm. He didn't make a lot of plays on the outside because, he got injuries. And then he's a rookie, so as a rookie, it takes a minute to get adjusted to the receivers because most of the time he was put against the team's best receiver. So he was playing against Brandon Marshall and people like that. So the other one is Brandon Carr. At this point, I hate him because he picked off Ben Roethlisberger to end the game. But
that's
probably
my Cowboys highlight last year, too.
I think that was everybody's highlight. I heard about it. But he had 48 tackles and 3 picks last year, but he also has 259 tackles and 11 interceptions all time. Mm-hmm. And as a corner, that means he's a pretty physical corner because he's getting tackles and he's getting interceptions.
Yeah.
And the last person on my list and everybody's favorite person other than DeMarcus Ware is Sean Lee. Sean Lee is their best linebacker they have. He can cover. He can tackle. He's fast. Mm-hmm. Without him, they're a different team. But with him, the Cowboys can win 10, 11 games because he can help out DeMarcus so much. DeMarcus don't have to do everything. He can just roam like he usually do. And, with Sean Lee, the Cowboys defense is a completely different team.
For sure. Well, that's about going to do it for us today on The Locker Room. We're going to be back on Friday. We're going to hopefully have a local guest in talks with a Commerce High School kid. So hoping we can get one up here. We can talk to him about the upcoming season. If that doesn't happen, we'll be sure to have somebody to talk to. And we're going to talk a lot more about the Cowboys, the Rangers, whatever else needs talking
Something
about.
Something will happen.
Something's going to happen.
It's Texas.
You can rely on that.
Yeah, there's been news all over the place. I didn't even include half the stuff I heard on the radio today. So we'll have a lot to talk about. Anyways, I'm Cooper Welch.
I'm Jordan Davis.
And I'm Taylor Phillips.
This is KETR's Locker Room. See you on Friday. I'm gonna go get some more.